So here's to all of the good thinkers, and here's to the lonely drinker. But don't you know, let this moment pass.
Hello, folks. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and I'm the host of the Crude Life Media Network and podcast. Thank you, folks, for tuning in to The Crude Life, a place for expert interviews, full-length features, and specialty programs. And it is all thanks to our fine sponsors. Be loyal to our sponsors. They keep the program free and literally keep our lights on.
So here's to watching the clocks of our grandfathers, and here's to stopping and picking flowers, and here's to not letting this moment pass you by.
Okay. Congressman Kramer, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm still riding the wave.
So we're off just actually less than a week off of your election time when you were voted in by the people of North Dakota for a U.S. Congress, and this is your
third term.
Are you going to do you guys ever take a break from campaigning?
Well, you know, it's interesting you ask that because you know, when the founders created the House of Representatives with its two-year terms, the whole point of it was that one half of the power in the Congress, not the numbers, but the power of the Congress, would be subject to re-election every 2 years, so that the power would be in the hands of the people as opposed to the politician, which is why they call it the People's House. And so the two-year term, while it looks like it's very political because you're always having to campaign, really was by design. Mm-hmm. And what I say really is that if you do your job well in the People's House, campaigning sort of takes care of itself. You know, the town halls and the interviews, the time spent in the district, as they say, I call it the state, but you know, most mm-hmm. districts aren't an entire state. All of that is just good common sense public policy that results in good politics.
So one thing I've noticed about your campaign, not your campaign, your candidate, not your candidacy, your officialness, I guess,
yeah,
your congressness, is you're not afraid to talk to people. You're not afraid to listen to them. You might not agree with them, and right. You might not run back to the House and say, John Fox down in Bismarck wants this changed, you know, and you might
it's
disagree
greatest
with
idea
them.
In the world, yeah.
But you'll let people speak their mind.
Well,
that's unusual.
I'm surprised how unusual it is.
Yeah.
You know, I have the distinction of having the most town halls of any member of Congress, and I say that somewhat, you know, grieving, because what bothers me is that more members don't do more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they rob themselves. I mean, Jason, the reality for it is this is sort of selfish on my part. It does two things for me. One is I just enjoy the heck out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like people,
yeah, right?
So that helps, right? But the other thing is I learn a lot. Yesterday, as an example, as we record this, I was in Minot at a veterans employment meeting. It was pretty much an all-day deal. There were panels, and I was a keynote speaker at lunch, did a little town hall for an mm-hmm. hour prior to that. And it was employers, and it was veterans, it was HR officials, it was, you know, other public officials, that veteran service officers, for example, and higher education. And the reporter asked me afterwards, what do you hope to take away from this? And I said, knowledge. You know, it helps me be better, right?
Right.
And so when you're out there dealing with things like SBA, you know, funding, for example, or VA support for businesses, or you're dealing with the transition, which is really what the whole day is about, the transition of military personnel to civilian life. If you're listening to real live examples of employers and employees, veterans and the government and anecdotes and whatnot, that makes legislating a lot more meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
So to your original point, I enjoy it, but it also helps me be a better congressman. I always say, you can either be smart or resourceful, so I lean heavily on resourcefulness.
I looked at it as you were really blazing your own path for your own narrative, meaning that you're a member of a party, Republican Party,
right.
You know, and maybe even you've got some donors or you've got some special interests or something that maybe march behind you a little bit more than others. Mm-hmm. But if you're exposing and making yourself accessible to everybody, mm-hmm. I don't see how that can't warrant respect from both sides of the aisle.
You know, it's a great point because that's important.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people like to govern with consensus. And I always say, but if you're going to govern with consensus, you don't need a government. You know, mm-hmm. in other words, what, you won't need courts, you don't need a legislative body, you don't need, you know, arbitrate anything. You just have consensus. Well, the absence of consensus requires a government, but we're a self-governed government. And so for me, when you say blazing your own narrative, okay, I got just about 70% of the vote in this last election. That means 30% didn't vote for mm-hmm, me. Mm-hmm. I represent all of them, but hopefully the other 30% still respect me. If I get, if I talk to 100 people and 50 of them agree with me and 50 of them disagree with me, my hope is that at least 100 of them respect me. And hopefully they know that I respect them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the bigger thing. So you have a relationship. Even I'd go so far, Jason, to say I have a particular blessing in that I feel like I have an intimacy with the people of North Dakota. But I like it so much. I like it so, I mean, it sounds corny. My wife, Chris, who just walked across the street, you know, while we do this, she never gets tired of me saying, God, I love these people. Every time we leave another town, you know, it's like, God, I love these
people. It's fun to connect.
But you see, you do the same thing.
Absolutely.
See, that's the thing. You're not different than me. You just have a different job than
right.
me.
Right. You come in and you bring it from a policy side and, right. and a government side. I come in from a promotional, help you out, let's find more about your information side.
Right.
But, yeah, we essentially our circles are the same.
They are.
And it is very fun to be a part of those individual communities.
Yeah.
And it's neat, and let's talk about that community building, mm-hmm. Because really, at the end of the day, that's what it's all
that's
about,
it. Yep.
Whether it's roads or whether it's
yep.
bridges.
Yep.
But North Dakota's got an airport building going on like you wouldn't believe. I swear to God, every single airport in this state has gotten federal and state money to yep. upgrade something yep. or another. What does that tell you about yep. what's going on?
So it's a great question, because when you think about Our, you know, we've been operating in Congress under sequestration. Clearly, the one area that we've made progress on is the deficit spending, because we've cut a lot of discretionary spending. We've got a long ways to go, by the way, but the discretionary side we've pretty much cut as far as we can. And yet in North Dakota, in little old North Dakota, we've seen tremendous investment, as you said, both state and federal and some local, and our airport infrastructure. And that's a testimony to the good investment it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the recognition by the FAA, for example, that even within their discretionary funds, they need to invest here. And that's not just the congressional delegation going and making the pitch and convincing, you know, the bureaucracy. No, it's really the communities and the businesses and the users of those airports that have demonstrated the demand for longer and thicker and upgraded runways and landing strips and other facilities. But you're right, it's a great observation. I always say that the growth of our airports is perhaps one of the leading indicators of how strong our economy is.
And that's why I bring it up, because when you start seeing, you know, Ellendale and
right.
Bowman, and
right.
you know, when you start seeing these towns that, you know, either are going to shrink or they're going to grow.
Right.
You know, they're getting the Kindred's another fine example.
Kindred's a good example.
To see that they're investing into it says, one, if you look at the increase in private aviation over the last 10 years, it's incredible.
It is.
I mean, for $50,000, you can go buy an airplane now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking to the executive director from the Williston Airport. You know, that's a story in itself. First one in 25 years, there are four
yeah.
of them in the last 25 years that they've actually moved like that
yep.
for that scale.
Yep.
That tells me we're getting more white-collar traffic, which means good investments. So when I look at, okay, Williston's in these small towns, airlines are up, that means people are coming in here doing planning.
That's right.
They're coming in here. You know, that's really, because this is not your blue-collar workers that are coming and going out of these airports a lot of times. Sure, you've got some families, things, but a lot of it is that commerce.
It's executive.
Yeah.
Executive travel. Yeah.
So where are we at with the oil industry these days? You know, low prices, obviously, but you have a very good finger on the pulse of whether it be Harold Hamm whether it be, you know, any one of the industry leaders. What are you hearing about the Bakken? What are you hearing?
Yeah. So, you know, we've seen a flattening out. And yet, it's amazing how the investment has hung in there. Clearly not as many new wells being drilled, although we've even seen a little uptick in that now. We have seen tremendous efficiencies, and that's been forced by the lower price.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still producing a lot more oil than there's a demand for in the world, and that's always going to be a problem until we see one of two things: either less supply or much greater demand. And I expect that we're going to see some more demand before very long, but we're clearly, I don't think, going to see over $100 a barrel oil anytime soon. But it's amazing how the companies have found ways to produce it at a much lower price. Obviously, the lifting of the oil export ban provided more market opportunity for U.S. oil, but then the Iran nuclear deal, you know, mm-hmm. put a little bit more supply into the global marketplace. That's been a bit of a problem. One of the interesting things I think we can look forward to now in the next several months to a couple of years is we're going to see more costs coming down on the production side, because we're going to have access to more oil with the President Trump and much of the regulatory relief, which all adds cost to drilling and to fracking and to producing and to moving the oil, along with more access to federal lands and offshore, so that producers can have more choices. They can take, you know, they can go for the more efficient oil to produce. So, you know, I don't know on the price side, Jason, what we're going to see in terms of movement. Hopefully it'll get back up over 50, head towards 60, and settle in someplace. But in the meantime, at the very least, we can do a lot to bring down the cost.
EPA going to, how do you see them over the next 4 years, with whether it be with Trump in there?
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking coal, we're talking mm-hmm. just energy overall.
Yeah. So you're going to see a much lighter touch from the EPA. I would advocate even a consolidation of the EPA, perhaps into another agency or
like
multiple
that.
Agencies. Government needs to become more lean and more mm-hmm. efficient, for sure. But I can guarantee you things like, you know, there are a number of regulations or rules that are in various stages of completion. And most of them are being hung up in court, whether it's Waters of the U.S., Clean mm-hmm. Power Plan, Methane Rule, the Federal Fracking Rule, you know, the prohibition on federal coal leasing, you know, as you talk about coal, and all of those are going to be done. I mean, those will be either the new attorney general and their bank of attorneys are just going to go back to the courts and say, okay, we messed up, we'll take them back now, or we'll see, you know, wherever it's possible, the signature of the president will undo rules where we can, and where necessary, the Congress will step in and we'll legislate some things. But now that we have, you know, enough a consolidated government, if you will,
mm-hmm.
In a 100% Republican unified government, I think we're going to see a lot less EPA.
Good news. All right, last question for you, then we'll let you get off to your football game. It is Kindred Vikings, isn't it?
It is Kindred Vikings.
What was I going to add? UAS industry. North Dakota is one of six test states. The Eastern... the Red River has got a backbone, whether it's Northrop Grumman or whether it's, well, from Grand Forks to Wahpeton, you got Fargo with NDSU, you got UND up there. Let's just talk a little bit about that UAS industry, which I think, and I've said this a couple years ago, it truly is the next big boom in North Dakota in terms of a quick surge of new dollars that are coming into the marketplace. That's how I look at this UAS industry. How do you see it?
It's really quite remarkable. The UAS, I believe, you're right, is the next big boom product line, if you will. But it's not just a product. That's the great thing about UAS. UAS is not just sort of, not to diminish the manufacturing of a product, it's really critical. But UAS involves so much intellectual mm-hmm. talent, it involves engineering talent, it involves manufacturing talent, it involves ethics. I cannot think of a better place in the world than the Red River Valley of the North for this industry to blossom. Mm-hmm. And clearly, private investors are seeing that, as you said, from Wahpeton to Grand Forks to the border, really. And the thing is, we've got some advantages. You talked about airports at the beginning. We have an aviation culture in this state. Pretty much unequaled.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much unequaled. We've always been few people with a lot of space, and whether it's agriculture application or just general aviation convenience or other moving other products, we have that culture. Second thing we have is we have these, I call them knowledge factories. So from, you know, Wahpeton, Fargo, Grand Forks, as you stated, and then Devil's Lake with Lake Region, and even in the Minnesota side, the technical school up in East Grand Forks, we have these knowledge factories that fit right in. You know, the aviation school is obvious in its role. The fact that the University of North Dakota has the very first UAS degree program. The incredible asset that the Grand Forks Air Force Base provides. And while we grieve the loss of the bombers and the tankers and the, you know, and we hope for another mission like that someday, the availability of that spectacular piece of real estate, and I think we have to give a lot of credit to Grand Forks, to the county, Grand Forks County, and to the Air Force that agreed in a first of its kind expanded use lease program that separates part of the airbase out while still being part of the airbase. And that's what allows companies like Northrop Grumman, General Atomics, and others to make major investments. And these are the UAS leaders in the world. Mm-hmm. They always have been, whether it's in the manufacture of the aircraft or the training of the pilots or the testing of systems that are attached to these spectacular aircraft. We've got it all, and we have the airspace. And you know what else we have, Jason, that we're so, you know, I think we sometimes maybe undersell? We have this entrepreneurial spirit here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just anybody came across these prairies and stopped here to plant a crop and make a living. It starts out right there. You can even say that the first Americans, they were innovators. They had to be. And so we've seen that culture carry on through agriculture, through energy, and now in aviation. So it's pretty cool. And I think you're right. I think we're just scratching the surface now.
I do too. Thank you, sir.
It's my pleasure, buddy.
That's good. Anytime.
And here's to the sound of one hand clapping. And here's to not letting this moment pass. And here's to carrying the weight of the world. And here's to screaming, yeah, never being heard. And here's to not letting this moment pass.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
The oil and gas industry is coming back, and you need a source to keep up to date on the industry. Check out Oil Man, the magazine for leaders in the American energy industry. Each issue gives you a competitive edge with the latest oil and gas news. In addition to the news and analysis, the Oil Man brings you exciting features, publishes photos from yesteryear that chronicle the history of the oil and gas industry. Visit oilman.com to learn more and subscribe today. That's theoilman.com.